about time to get started. We're going to go ahead and get started. If you'll go ahead and get comfortable. I guarantee that we're going to get to Abraham tonight. And maybe even a little further. I've got to do this for Royce's sake. Lord willing, this Sunday, Royce will be taking the class, and he'll have this it's coming Sunday and the following Wednesday, as I will be out of town. I'm going to Portland, Texas for a gospel meeting, so I'll be gone for first part of next week. So I'm just so thankful that we have so many good, qualified men that are able to teach and preach, and so that's a very rewarding thing. You know, as I think about that, I want to remind all the men here that that's not an excuse for us or any man not to preach or teach. And sometimes we might feel like we don't really have to or something. Well, we ought to try. And we ought to try to do something. So I'm not picking on anybody. But I remember when I was at Roanoke, Texas for 7 years. And we had an eldership. And I love those elders, but they would not teach. I hardly ever would teach, and consequently, I had every class, every sermon, and I didn't get a break. I had the ladies' class or Tuesday. I had, you know, the bulletin articles. I had the newspaper articles. I had the radio program, and it wore me out. So anyway, I never complained, but I look back on that, and I remember. It's good to see everybody. Keep hearing about a cool front. I hope someone keep talking about that, because if that happens, I'll get real happy, and I'm ready for it. One of the things about the Old Testament is that the Bible has genealogies in it, and these genealogies are true and historically truthful, historically accurate, and there's no reason to dispute that. The actual nations that exist today are the result of these descendants of Noah. Science doesn't dispute that. The reality that there was and still a people that claimed to be Semitic or Jewish is in and of itself proof that there is a historical reality behind that claim, and that claim goes back to Abraham. You know, the Bible is very unique in this regard. Ancient book, as we've talked about, a best-selling book above all other books. The Quran does not have genealogies. It does not contain a detailed, accurate list of people. The Book of Mormon doesn't. It alludes to certain so-called tribes and people and names. But stop and think for just a moment. Think about this from the standpoint of proof that the Bible is accurate, inspired. Why is it that the Bible has this and the other books don't? Yep. What else? There's several ideas. What would it require? What would it require to have these types of facts that you have in the Bible? If you were going to have that, the
inspired knowledge,
it'd have to be very accurate, wouldn't it? Because if you're going to claim this, when Moses wrote this, Moses would have had to have had, if he wasn't inspired, if he hadn't been inspired, he'd have had to have something telling him about the names of individuals before the flood, the names of the individuals since the flood. And when you read these genealogies, I hope the older you get, the older you are, you read those and you go, wow. Everybody today, how many of you have taken all this DNA sampling stuff where you're sending it in and they're getting you programmed into the big mama papa computer now, and you're in the big, and you can find out who you're related to and who your blood type, and you can find out your genetics. It's a real big deal. And it's scientific. It's accurate. And you can find out where you're from. You can find out the different types of blood and genetics, and determine if you are from Asia or Europe, or you're, again, American Indian. A lot of people said, I'm American Indian. This is one of the interesting things about this. I'm American Indian. I've got a lot of Indian in me, and they're finding out they actually didn't. They don't. Some politicians have said that lately. My wife said that, and she don't have any Indian in her. Of all people who had a little bit of Indian in him was my dad. And I thought that was interesting. But you can kind of do that, and that's scientific. That's accurate. That's detailed, and it goes into a database. And Gina's done it, and I won't do it. I ain't going to do it. And she's got this website she goes into now, and she can type in there. And the more detailed information that's plugged into this big website, the more people do this, the more that there's connections and trees and genealogies and details. And she's already gotten messages from people that were very, very closely matches, you know, related to her. And so it's kind of interesting to her. To me, it's like, nope. I don't want anybody finding out who I am. Now, my mom and dad both did it, and then they asked me for my birthday. This is a side point. This doesn't cost you anything. None of this costs you anything. And mom said, you want me to send you this for your birthday? It's usually $50 or something, and I can get a discount since your dad and I have both done it, and you can do yours, and you can see where you came from. And I went, no. So I'll just take the $50. Because if I know where you came from, and I know where you came from, unless there's something you haven't told me, I'm pretty sure I know where I come from. So I didn't do it. Anyway, kind of made her mad, but she's all right. But the Bible's full of genealogies, and they're accurate, and it's very interesting. And the more I've studied this, thinking about the class, when you get to Noah in Genesis chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9, and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, you have the dispersion of nations, the, if you will, the renewal of nations. And there's been a lot of research on that, and Japheth is probably the feller that went over towards Greece, or what would become Europe, European nations. Ham likely went down towards Africa. Becomes more of the Africanus bloodlines and people of that nature. And Shem, he's more of a Asiatic, or they say more your Hebrew, become the Hebrew line where ultimately Christ will come through. And Abraham will come through that line. And so there's not any confusion over that. But ultimately, it's interesting after the flood what happens, and we're not going to go back through all the flood, but I want you to look at your Bible in Genesis chapter 10 and notice how this begins the generations of Noah in detail. And remember, Moses by inspiration is receiving this revelation at Mount Sinai, or in the wilderness, or while he's leading the Israelites out of Egyptian bondage or away from Egypt. And this is when this book is being written. And that's why I wanted to mention Moses having to go back and write all this in detail. How would he know this? Who would have kept up with all these records? Who would have had a scroll that detailed everybody that descended from the flood? Now, we know the flood was very well known. I read here just last week where more than 300 cultures, to this day, more than 300 cultures, different cultures have a Noahic flood story, a story of a major catastrophic flood. flood. It is so well known and so well established. Scientists, atheists hate that. Your geologists hate that are atheists. But anyway, it's their problem, not mine. In Genesis chapter 10, can you imagine Moses here? God has already told him chapters 1 through 9 and given in detail the account of the flood and exactly what happened. And Moses is writing, and he gets to chapter 10, or as we have it divided in chapter 10, and he's told, "Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and unto them were sons born after the flood. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, and Magog, and Madai, and Jabin, and Tubal, and Meshech, and Tyrus, and the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, and all these names." And then you get down here, look at verse 5. "By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations." Now I want to point verse 5 out, because guess what has already happened in verse 5, but we haven't read about it yet in the book of Genesis. Look at Genesis chapter 11. Look at verse 1. Sometimes the Hebrews writer, or the Old Testament writers, will do this thing called ellipsis. It's even done today, where you basically go back as you're writing and you're explaining what's already happened. Sometimes movies and people who will write dramatic type of scripts will do that, where they'll be in the movie and you're watching a movie, and then all of a sudden in the movie they'll jump back in time and go back to a scene where something happened when they were a child or something, when it happened to help describe what's going on in the present day. Does that make sense? That's called ellipsis. It's common in literary devices. Well, look at Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there." Now, wait a second. Again, Moses, are you contradicting yourself? Is the whole world of earth of one language? Or over here in Genesis 10, didn't you just say in verse 5 that "By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, and everyone after his tongue, and their families in their nations"? No, that's exactly the point. Moses knew right well what he was doing by inspiration. This had already happened. Genesis chapter 11 had already happened when he's writing this. Genesis chapter 10 had already happened. And that's the interesting thing about inspiration in the Bible. It's like a story. It is a story. It's a historical fact, but by inspiration, Moses is receiving this revelation as it happened, and he's going to tell us in chapter 10 about the dispersion, or the growth of Noah's children. But in this, Genesis chapter 11 takes place. And so you can take chapter 11, you can plug it in somewhere in between some of these sons, when these sons left the ark and they started to establish themselves in the valley or in the region of Shinar, and they were of one language at this time. And this is before God will confound their languages. So I want you to note that as you're reading through the Bible. Look at verse 6, Genesis chapter 10. "The sons of Ham, Cush, and Mizraim, and Put, and Canaan." You see the names there referring to, no doubt, people that would become the Canaanites. You remember, we'll deal with the Canaanites, and Joshua will go in and destroy the Canaanites. David will kind of finish them off. But these are names that will become the sons of great nations or peoples. And that's the interesting thing here that we're dealing with. And so it'll tell us that these sons, like Cush in verse 7, and Seba and Havilah, that those are names that become established places, locations, cities, and so on and so forth. Today we still have certain cities that are named after people in this country. Anybody ever heard of Gatlinburg, Tennessee? Gatlinburg? Well, the word burg is interesting because it has to do with a dwelling place where the Gatlins dwelt. The family name, the Gatlins. Incidentally, the Gatlins, that family are the family that created, remember that gun? The Gatlin gun? And by the way, they're distant cousins of mine, from what I'm told. There you go, that DNA stuff. But nonetheless, yeah, the Gatlin brothers, Larry Gatlin, he's supposed to be a cousin of mine or something, according to my great aunt. But anyway, that's the way it is here. And so you're reading this, as this is very detailed. But verse 9, look at this. Nimrod is being spoken of here, who is Cush's son. And he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And so there was this established cultural tradition, if you will, or understanding based upon this man, Nimrod. And maybe back then in that day and age, Nimrod, a hunter, a mighty man. Today, do we not have renowned individuals known for their great feats established? We do. And Nimrod was something that Moses writes here about and says he was a mighty hunter. And verse 10 says this, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Now that's interesting, or Babylon. Anybody ever heard of the Babylonians? Well, here you have the seed or the offspring here, it seems, that would become the Babylonians. A people that would ultimately be the enemies of God. But God would use them to bring his people into captivity to teach them a land. But then look at verse 10, the last part. And Erech and Akkad and Calne in the land of Shinar. You see that? Now Shinar there, if I understand my geography, my Bible geography, is the location of where the Assyrians come from. Eventually the Assyrians will come out of the area of Shinar. And so these great nations will develop. And then look at verse 11. Out of that land went forth Asher and builded Nineveh. Oh, well, there's the Ninevites. The Ninevites who will be here. Notice of what descendants in verse 6 are they? Ham's descendants, right? And guess what? Right here, Moses, a Levite of the tribe of Levi, right? His brother Aaron will be the first high priest. His sister Miriam will be a prophetess in Israel. But yet all of them are from the tribe of Levi. And God will establish and organize them into that tribal, priestly tribe. And here, out of Levi, we will get the preachers, the teachers of the law for Israel, the special people that God will use to bring about a seed promise that will become the Christ out of the tribe of Judah, but a promise that was to the whole world. And we get to Abraham in just a second. And yet these Ninevites here from the people of Ham, these Ninevites who are these wicked people, a little old prophet named Jonah will be told years and years later, you go over to them Ninevites and you preach. You preach unto them Ninevites and you tell them to repent or they're going to perish, because there's a God in heaven that loves them, but they're going to have to do better, do right. And even Jesus will talk about the Ninevites. So these names are important. And you think Moses was contemplating the deep future about Jonah and what would happen in all these nations? Well, he didn't know. He wasn't given that insight. But he's given us right here the insight to help us put it all together. That's why the Bible was so amazing in part here. And so you can't overlook this. Then look at verse 15. And Canaan, There's that name Canaan. He begot Sidon, his firstborn. And again, the name, you're going to read about Sidon. And how that will become a location, a location geographically in the Bible. His firstborn and Heth, that's another name. And the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite. Enemies of God eventually. And people that will have to suffer because of their adversity, their adversarial nature towards God's people and His promise. And so look at verse 18 where it says, the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. And those Canaanites came from the tribes of Ham, or the patriarch Ham. And so that's interesting there to read. Verse 21, unto Shem. And now this is where we get to Abraham. And this is what the Bible's doing here. It's wanting us to get to Abraham. By the way, which one's the oldest here? Ham, Shem, Ham, or Japheth? We don't really know, do we? We assume. Yeah. Yeah, that's back over in Genesis chapter 9. But it doesn't really tell us which one was the oldest, I don't believe. Look at Genesis chapter 9. And look at verse 22. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. And Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done unto him. We might be persuaded to think that Shem was the youngest, but we don't know that by reading the genealogies over in Genesis chapter 10. Like it was Japheth, Ham, and then Shem. We just are told here that Ham's the younger son. Well, I don't know which one. Is he the younger in the middle, or is he the youngest? If someone can answer that.
Could it
possibly be that they were triplets? Now you're really throwing a curveball. Evelyn said they could have been triplets. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, but we're not really told. We're not told. But here, but Canaan, notice over there in Genesis 9, Canaan's mentioned right there. So, as you read this, it unfolds. So now we're at Shem in Genesis 10:21, and Shem, also the father of all the children of Eber. That's the presumed idea, Hebrew or Eber, where we get the idea Hebrews. But there's a lot of speculation on that. So it's not nailed down in Scripture. It says that this is absolutely where the name Hebrew comes from, but we know Hebrews is used as it relates to the Shemitic people, the Semitics, the Semites. So there you have that. But then look at verse 22. The children of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, Aram, the children of Aram, Uz. You ever heard of the location of Uz? Uz is a location. Yeah. And Hul and Gether and Mosh. Arphaxad begot Selah, and Selah begot... Wait a second. I think I've read this name before. And as you start to read through this, you'll start to eventually pick up on the fact that if you go over to the New Testament in the book of Luke, Luke has a genealogy that ties in Christ. And takes Christ all the way back to Adam. Through this line right here, through Shem. And you'll read Arphaxad over there in the book of Luke, and here he is right here. Now how in the world, over 1600 year period of time, could mankind, without inspiration, have gotten that right? Or got that in detail? They didn't have DNA and blood and all these things back then that we do today. And so I think that that's something to show. And If you'll notice then, when you drop down to verse 31, Genesis 10, 31, these are the sons of Shem after their families, after their tongues, their languages, in their lands, after their nations. These are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. And that's when he goes back to Genesis chapter 11. He does this ellipsis thing. He goes back, and he's going to go back, and he's going to show us how this division of languages and the dispersion, if you will, into nations will take place. And so the Tower of Babel is the Babel? How do you say it?
Babel.
Babel. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the Greeks called the Germanic people, the Germanics, babblers. The King James Version translates the word barbarians. That word barbarian is actually, what's that word that sounds like it's pronounced? They call it an onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia.
Yeah, is that right? Is that the word in English that describes, that the word sounds like it? Yeah. I think the word barbarian is an onomatopoeia. I didn't do too good in English. I had to go take it twice. And I begged my high school senior teacher to let me out because she wasn't going to give me a D. But I made straight A's in English in college, and I loved it. I actually liked it in college, but I didn't like it in high school. Anyway, I remember that, but that's where the babblers, the Germanic people were called babblers or barbarians in the English translation. You know why? When they heard them speak in their Germanic language to the Greek, Roman, Latin speaking individual who were the sophisticated people, heard that language and they called them babblers. And it wasn't a term of endearment, it was a term that was kind of disparaging. Now guess what we said when we heard the American Indians, the Native Indians, speaking in their languages, which were not written down. They had no formal language written down. We ended up calling them savages because they were not a civilized people. And so history kind of repeats itself here in the way that we looked at this, because the American Indians were nomadic people. They did not have an established culture. They couldn't tell you who they were related to, where they came from. They warred amongst their own relatives, really, because they were all related. And they were always stealing from each other. And so what did the civilized people of the European nations who came over here seeking freedom of religion say and see when they saw all this? Well, they didn't call them babblers. They called them savages. And the word wasn't derogatory, but it was a word that described their savage behavior. Does that make sense? Even J.D. Tant, Texas preacher, if you haven't read that book, I would encourage you to read the memoirs of J.D. Tant, Texas preacher. That is an interesting book, one of my best favorite books I've ever read. And he talks about going over into the Indian nations and trying to preach the gospel in Oklahoma back in the 1800s. And he writes how preaching the gospel to them was like preaching to the barbarians, perhaps the Germanic people. It was difficult. And he calls them savages in that book. Savages, not as a term, like a bad word. It was descriptive. It was an adjective. They were not civilized. It's the opposite of civilized. So that's something you have to understand culturally and historically. Our people came out of Europe fleeing what kind of oppression? Yeah, religious, Roman Catholic oppression, and they were seeking freedom. Were they seeking to go back and be savage? Were they seeking to be what do you call it when you eat human beings? Cannibalistic? Or were they seeking to follow a moral, ethical pattern that God had given us in the Bible to be just that? And so they get over here and they find all these nomadic, indigenous, native peoples who, by the way, historically migrated this way themselves, seeking refuge from oppression, likely from people like Genghis Khan, people like that. You remember that guy in history? Go read about him. He was a pretty rough feller. And read about some of his kinfolk. These weren't real nice guys. And so nonetheless, people are always fleeing all these things. Well, in Genesis chapter 11, during the days after the flood, there was a universal language in verse 1. The Hebrew word, their language, could be literally translated lip. It's where the idea tongue comes from. In the Greek, the word tongues is used for languages, because where and how do we speak? If you can't breathe, then you can't use your lips, and you can't use your tongue, you cannot speak. And there is no tongue, there is no language. Does that make sense? That's why it's called tongues or lips, languages. So that's a good translation, but it's interesting how that idea comes about. You ever cut your tongue or bit your tongue or your tongue swelled up, or you go to the dentist and you get a root canal and you're all swollen and you feeling pretty good and you want to call your wife just to talk because you feel really silly. And you go, hey, how you doing? Anyway, that's the stuff I do, I guess. But in Genesis chapter 11, the Tower of Babel here, the confusion of languages. I want you to think about this. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, verse 2. They dwelt there, and they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. Now remember, they'd built an ark. These were not unskilled people. They knew how to build. They had learned how to build. If you go back to the genealogies before the flood, there was a guy over there that was an artificer of brass. Tubal? What does that mean? He was hammering out metals. Well, who taught him how to make metal out of iron and brass and then create an instrument? That's been around for a while. Well, they knew how to build. So they said, let's make some brick. And the Lord, there in verse 5, came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. What happens when men have the ability to all speak the same language? Well, what happens here? Let me ask you this question. The prophet Zephaniah, that little prophet Zephaniah, will talk about a day when the Lord will bless the world with the pure language. Once again, the pure language must be the gospel. The gospel is one language. Whether it's translated into Spanish or Russian or Chinese, it's still one language. And I want you to think about that one language here that everybody's speaking. And is it time to go? No. In Genesis chapter 11, that one language here that everybody's speaking, I'm going to make a comparison here and show you what happens. What everybody will do when they can speak the same language, this is what they do in Genesis chapter 11. They start to do things with their imagination to try to become godlike. And that's a failure. I'm going to show you something here. The internet, World Wide Web, has done something that we haven't had since, I would suggest unto you, Genesis chapter 11. The ability to quickly translate language, and everyone, whether you're in Russia or you're in the United States of America, be able to speak the same language. How do I know this? I can get on that Facebook. I don't do it anymore, but you can get on that Facebook and you can start talking and get on a forum or get on a page, and all of a sudden someone from Russia comes in and he starts to type and it shows up in those Russian letters, but down there right below it, it says, see translation. And guess what that guy over in Russia did whenever he saw whatever so-and-so said in English, and he's commenting or replying to that comment, he must have clicked on what? See translation. So now we can understand each other quickly. And on my phone here, I've got an app called Google Translate. I like this app. I really like this app because I practice my Spanish. And I'm not going to practice in front of you because I would sound pretty foolish. But I'll go right there to Google Translate and I'll look at Mario or Francisco or I don't remember the other guy's name this morning down in Del Rio. And I'll say, Señor, amigo, in my southern dialect, of course. And then I'll start to type something. And I'll look at it and go, okay, now this is what it says in Spanish, and I'll do that right there. And guess what? Now he and I speak the same language, just like that. And there's no excuse for him or me to not understand each other. And I can say adios, and he'll go goodbye. And so we get along pretty good. Well, I'll tell you what's going on now that we can all speak the same language again. Do you know what is the number one thing on the internet, the World Wide Web? The exploitation from the world, from the four corners, the four winds? Pornography. The imagination of man's doing pretty good again, isn't it? I would say unto you that the Tower of Babel in many ways is just like the internet. But here's something interesting to me. Now maybe it's not to you, but I think it's interesting. I think it's biblical. God gave us, he disperses them right here, right? He says, I've had enough of that. Man doesn't do too good when they all speak the same language. They're all the same lip, tongue. They don't do too good. They use their imagination for not good, but for bad. So I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to disperse them. But coming 2,000 years, 2,500 years, 3,000 years later, I tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to send my only begotten son through a guy named Abraham here. I'm going to refine this promise. He's already revealed that promise in Genesis 3 through Adam and Eve. But I'm going to refine this problem through Abraham. And then a prophet named Zephaniah years later, about 1,000 years or so before Christ, will say, I'm going to grant unto the people, I'm going to give them a pure language. A language that only pure people will understand, but everybody can understand it. And that language is the gospel today. And that language is a language that does something to us. It unites us again. So whether you speak Spanish, Russian, Chinese, English, it doesn't matter. If you obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, guess what you become? You become my brother or sister in Christ. And that makes me one in unity with you. You think about God, but think about it this way too. How many people listen and learn and do this language, the gospel of Jesus Christ? Why do you speak unto us in parables, Jesus? Because hearing they hear not, and seeing they see not, and so I speak unto them in parables. If they want to understand the parable, then they can do what? They can hear and they can see. And they will understand, and they can do. But you're going to have to want to. That's why it's so intriguing to me to want to learn a different language like Spanish. I'm very interested in that in my own way. Now, don't push me because I'm at my own pace here. But I am trying. I try to listen very carefully to what they're saying because I want to learn what they're saying and how they say it so I can know. But it's very difficult. But I'm thankful I've got the Bible, but it takes time here too. I've got to give this Bible, the gospel, attention. And so right here, the imagination of man, what did the imagination of man do during the days and before the flood? Genesis chapter 6. Yeah, and here it is again, this idea of the imagination being used for evil. And so in verse 7, let us go down and confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. Verse 8, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel. The word Babel there in verse 9 is confusion. God, the Lord, did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. These, verse 10, are the generations of Shem, and he goes back into this. And from this point forward, he's going to get us to Abraham. From Shem to Eber in verse 15. From Eber to Peleg. To Peleg to Reu. To Reu, Serug. Serug to Nahor in verse 24. Nahor, Terah. And Terah will be 70 years old and have a son named Abram. A son named Nahor. And a son named Haran. Now look at that name, Haran, just for a moment. Does that sound familiar today? Haran. Where are the modern day Persians today? In fact, if you went to this country, they would say that they are Persians. Iran. Haran. Iran. The Iran is the English form of that word. So it is speculative here, with some evidence that of Terah, Abraham's brother, Haran, is where you get the Persians, which would become Iran today. Is that kind of interesting to you? And guess what? Those people in Iran are the leading. I forget what they call those guys over there. Yeah, the. I shouldn't laugh at that. They don't like the people in Jerusalem, do they? No, they do not. So let me ask you again, is this all coincidental, or is this something that we can say, hey, there's a Bible that talks about how all this developed? And so we get to Abraham here. And there you go, Royce. It's all you. It's a Sunday. I got to Abraham. But say, hey, there's a lot to talk about with Abraham, so I'm giving you plenty to talk about.
Take one quick observation.
Yes, sir.
Verse 7, it says that God looked down, the Lord looked down and said, come, let us.
Yes, sir.
The exact phraseology you find in Genesis 1:7, he says, let us make man in our own image, all three members of the Godhead.
That's right. Hey, and when we get to Deuteronomy, remember it's Moses writing that, right? Moses, let us create man in our image, let us hear. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, Moses will write, the Lord our God is one. Now, do you think Moses understood that there was only one God, yet in three persons? I would say he did to some degree. I don't know how much he understood that, but he understood there were one. They were not working apart. They did not work in division. And I hope that's been interesting to you. It's a great study. Every time I go back through the Bible and I study it, I wonder why I have taken so long to get back to it. I'm reading through the Psalms right now again, and I'm in that 90 and 100th section, and I was I just can't believe what I keep reading. I'm like, wow, why? How could you ever get bored with the Bible? I don't understand. Anyway, appreciate your kind.